Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome along to another edition of Retro Press X to continue. Now, this is the place where we relive our first iteration of this Your Favourite Games podcast by bringing you some of our original episodes to brand new platforms for the first time ever. Now, this one is from January 2021, a time, if you remember, where the UK was back in lockdown, Elon Musk overtook Jeff Bezos as the world's richest man, and the series WandaVision, starring Elizabeth Olsen, was kickstarting the Marvel move into telly. Now, on Press X, YouTuber Vicstar was telling us all about an esports hookup of his. Plus, we had Els the Witch and Gav Murphy on talking NBA 2K21, Resident Evil 3, and Yakuza. Enjoy.
Hey, have you got any New Year's resolutions?
I might try and finish games this year. I felt like last year I started loads and didn't finish them. Ghost of Tsushima, Assassin's Creed. I haven't finished Cyberpunk yet. I feel like I need to actually finish
Hold on,
them.
Steph, what did you finish?
To be fair, those are three massive games. I think maybe you need to start playing smaller games.
That's exactly it. Well, Gav, you're here and you're going to be chatting about Resident Evil 3 today, right?
Yeah, man. It's a game that came out last year. It's like one of those games where I think when it came out, people didn't really rate it. But I think the further we get away from the actual release, the better it is. I don't know if that's saying that it's a really good game or a bad game or what, but I feel like without the cloud of it being a new release, for me, it's got like a second lease of life anyway.
Have you just forgotten all the bad bits about it in that period?
Nah, man. Like, I played it when it first came out, and I've just replayed it recently for our channel and on hardcore mode. And yeah, it feels like a different game. I got completely different eyes on it now.
Okay, well, anytime you play a Resident Evil game on hardcore mode, that's already me bringing me out in a cold sweat just thinking
that's
about
how it should be played.
Yeah.
It's a zombie apocalypse. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Player three today, we've got Els the Witch. You're back on the pod. Welcome back, Els.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Now, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you're going to say about your game because, and we were just saying this before we started recording, my finger has hovered over the download button for this title so many times. So are you going to be, you know, should I be pressing the button, basically?
Yes, you need to. So NBA 2K21, this is my second year playing the game. So I actually started playing last year during lockdown on NBA 2K20 because it was on offer. I think they were doing it for like £3 in the PlayStation store. So I was like, you know what? I'll get it, try it out. It takes a while to get good at it. But once it clicks at some point and then you can just understand how to play it. But what I'm going to focus on today is the next gen patch for NBA 2K21 because the way that they've just transformed the whole game is insane and I'm really excited.
Okay, so we're going to get into all of those games in a sec. We've also had a chat with Vicstar of the Sidemen all about his involvement in Call of Duty esports. And also, we've been getting some of his tips as well on being a gaming YouTuber. Now, before we get started with all of that, and I know you've sort of mentioned it a little bit with 2021 resolutions. I've not given it enough thought, so I'm gonna give it some thought. Will you tell me what's your resolution then for 2021?
I would like to do like a gaming challenge because I've never done like a gaming challenge. I know there's a lot of people that do all sorts of challenges for the games that they've already played. For example, some people, they do like Dark Souls runs where they play with only one hand and things like that. Or
no hit run on Dark Souls. Do
yeah.
that.
Like, I want to try out a challenge because I love playing my games on hard. Like any time a game gives me a difficulty setting, I'm like, yeah, go hard, let's do it.
Yeah,
I don't get that. I've never been like that. Yeah,
come on. I say to myself, right? I've been playing games for a few decades now. I can't be on normal anymore, innit? That's not normal no more. I'm hard now. Yeah, hard.
No, I'm not about that life.
I'm not like that either.
I'm with
I like
US.
The storyline.
Come on.
Yeah, I sometimes put it on easy as well.
Oh, you got to rank up. Yeah. You got to rank up sometimes, guys.
I'm with US. Put it on easy. I'm fine.
Story,
I'm done.
I like the storyline.
Nah, easy, bruv. How long have you been playing games for? You're still on easy.
I don't
Come
care.
On.
I just want the story. I'm with you.
Most of these games, they perform the same. Left stick move. A
exactly.
is action.
What
Come
more
on.
Do you want?
I know you should do. Maybe you should do like a speed running thing. So I felt like I don't watch a lot of Twitch. There's only a few people I watch on Twitch. Yeah. But there's this Scottish speed runner called Cammy Toman, and he's this Scottish. He's such a good streamer. But what he does, he picks like old games, like a Mickey Mouse game, or he did like Bram Stoker's Dracula on the Game Boy, and he finds games that like have a leaderboard that is doable in speed running times, and then he just plays them and plays them and plays them. I got properly into him over lockdown, man, because it's just like you watch someone play something, and he knows, you know, after a couple of minutes whether or not he's going to actually be able to do it. But he's playing these like old like Game Boy games and stuff like that. It's such a good laugh. Oh, maybe you could do that.
I'm down, Gav. Speed run, hardcore, that's me.
Yeah. Okay, Einel, we know what you're going to be doing there for the next few months, digging out the old Game Boy Advance. Els, have you got any sort of 2021 resolutions?
Yes, I've made some goals. I think I stream, like I try and stream on Twitch, but I'm really inconsistent. Mm. So my goal for the first quarter of the year is to make affiliate on Twitch. And I found my PlayStation 2 recently, so I'm going to start doing more sort of retro gaming content. I want to do like GTA, San Andreas. I want to get my Guitar Hero out because I found my Guitar Hero. I loved that. Ooh, yes. I used to play it all the time.
I think that was the one maybe that I came into as well. I think it's like World Tour or something.
That's
like that.
It.
Like,
yeah, World Tour.
God, man. That
and they boo you off stage
me.
If you were bad.
Did you guys ever play the Donkey Konga ones where it came with a conga?
Yeah, man,
drum?
That was amazing.
Yeah, it came with a little. Yeah, well, it never sounded that great. It was always like ka ka da da da.
I love Donkey Konga, man. One of my old places, when it was going under, when the business was going under, they were like, there was this big cupboard full of just tat they'd been sent over the years, and they were like, just have whatever you want. And it was just like, it was the saddest thing in the world. I've still got a photo of it, where it's just like 12 Donkey Kongas just stacked in a corner. Oh, and I was like, shall I take one? Yeah, I'll take one. I managed to get away with like a couple of GameCubes as well. Like,
nice.
People just didn't care about it at that point. I was like, I'll take it all.
Gav, just what have you got then for a resolution for 2021?
Gaming-wise, I don't know, man. I haven't actually thought about it.
I know it's sort of, you should think like, this is the first podcast in January. Obviously, we're going to be talking about resolutions. And then I just thought, oh, well, I didn't give that any thought whatsoever.
I feel like you've got a vendetta against me, because when I was doing my Hall of Game, I think you gave me about 15 second notice
That's true.
And for resolutions, the same. Do you know what? Genuinely, my actual resolution, I've been trying to learn it for a little bit. I want to learn more how to make a game. Because I want to do a series. I want to do a video on like doing a game jam or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the time, like I can be critical about games, but I kind of want to understand a little bit more about like coding and how games are actually made. So I think by the end of 2021, I want to do some kind of game jam. Whether that's like, that's not actually doing the coding. That's probably sitting with someone who's a lot smarter than me, and they do all the work while I go, can you make his head bigger?
I'm telling you, Gav, you should jump in on Dreams. They do monthly games.
Dreams is really good.
Yeah.
Well, let us know what your New Year's resolutions are. You can find us on socials, hashtag PressX to continue, get involved. Give us some ideas as well, because me and Gav are running a bit low here, to be fair, on ideas for resolutions. Right, let's get into the game that Einel's basically tried to shoehorn into every single podcast that we've done so far. 喜んでやらせてもらいます。 And finally he's getting a chance to talk about it. It's Yakuza Like a Dragon. Now this, you can get it on your PS4, Xbox One, also the Series X, and it'll cost you, depending on what you're buying it on, anywhere from 25 quid for the older generation consoles up to 50 quid plus on the brand new ones. So Yakuza, for people who don't know Einel, what is it? What's going on?
Let me set the scene, yeah? You play Ichiban Kasuga, right? He's a low-ranking member of the Tojo clan, right? Many clans in Japan. It's 2001. He wants to prove himself. All of a sudden, a murder happens, right? And they need someone to take the fall for it. One of the high-ranking officers killed someone they shouldn't have killed. Ichiban steps up. He's like, yo, I'll do that prison time. I'm about that life. Yeah. He goes down for 18 years. When he comes out, no one remembers him. His clan disown him. Everyone's just like, shun him. It's like, what's going on? And it's up to you to find out what's going on, to find out all the betrayals and all the backstabbings, and start yourself from the gutter, literally homeless, and work your way up to become big guy.
So it's an action adventure game, right? It's
action adventure RPG. So this is the first time they've changed the combat. So this is almost like the seventh or the eighth entry in the Yakuza series. But the good thing is, if you've never played any Yakuza games before, don't worry. Ichiban is a brand new character. It follows a brand new story. If you have played the older games, there are like nods and winks and hints at how things tie in, but you don't have to play the previous ones. Okay. And this is a very serious gangster story, but the main story is serious. The side quests are absolutely hilarious and crazy. Like, when I say crazy, right, I did a quest where some guy was getting beaten up in the street because he had some baby formula, and some other guy wanted baby formula off him. He's like, wow, what? So you break up the fight. Yo, what's going on? Leave my man with the baby formula. Then you find out the baby formula is for a nursery where gangsters go to dress up as babies in nappies and pretend to be babies and drink formula milk. That's just one side quest of hundreds. Yeah,
I've been to that bar, man. It's a good place. don't knock it till you tried it. It's a good laugh. They're good people. It's a good community, man.
It is. But it's set in Japan, Yokohama, right? And what I like most about this game is the city is really dense and it's really come to life, and there's lots for you to do. I think a lot of people were slightly disappointed about Cyberpunk and Watch Dogs, where it's more set dressing the city than anything else. Yakuza is not that. Like, you can go into different places. You can go into the arcade. You can play old school Sega games like Outrun and Virtual Fighter 2. The full arcade games are in the game that you can just play. You can go around. You can play like Mahjong and things like that. They've got their own version of Mario Kart in there called Dragon Kart, where you race around Japan and you throw items at each other while you're racing around the tracks. There's got its own backstory to that sequence. There's like a shed load of lots of different like activities. There's a management sim where you manage a club and you've got to recruit ladies into the club and things like that. It's mad. It
sounds a bit confusing. I know. What's
a lot going on?
Is it too much going on? Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know.
It's all optional. All that crazy stuff I'm talking about, you don't have to do it. It's just there. The main story, as I said, is quite a serious story about backstabbing and gangsters and different clans infighting and corruption in the police force and things like that. But if you want to go off the beaten path and you want to find out what's going on, the other day I did a quest where someone's publicly urinating in the waters. We've got to find out who's urinating everywhere. That's a side quest.
Has he got a Welsh accent and a black beard?
whoa, hang on. To be fair, I went, like, I think...
To be fair, it wasn't me, so...
It wasn't me, I weren't even there.
I wasn't even there.
It's someone else. Back on our Xbox Series X special, I think, like I said, this was the game that I was going to get into because I was meant to go to Japan twice in 2020. Both trips got cancelled, and I kind of wanted to... I've never played a Yakuza game. I played Judgment, which is kind of a sort of spin-off, a little bit more self-contained and a little bit easier to get your head around. But with Yakuza, I think, I'm going to go back and do it because I've got it. I just haven't put the time into it.
It's a slow starter, I won't lie. There's a lot of story off the top to kind of fill you in on what's happening, and that's mainly because it's probably like the seventh or the eighth game in the series. There's a lot of backstory that it kind of chucks at you, but once you're in, there's so many game systems and mechanics in there for you to kind of get to grips with. Like, if there's one side of the game that you don't like, there's another side that you enjoy.
Okay, yeah.
Now, Els, you do a lot of content about Grand Theft Auto. You've got Grand Theft Auto posters up in your house. You've already talked about wanting to, replay San Andreas in the new year. This sounds like it could be right up your street.
I was literally going to say, like, all the side quests and everything sounds a bit like GTA, which is what I love about GTA, because I love storylines, but I also like having a bit more control over, like, the game. So doing all the side quests and stuff like that sounds right on my street.
Oh, Els, you'd love to say. I don't want to spoil all of them, but there's tons. A lot of people talk about The Witcher 3 about and how great their side quests are. You ain't played Yakuza games yet, because when you play, you see these side quests and how crazy they are. One more, right? I went to the cinema in the game, and you can go watch a movie in the cinema. I was like, oh, sweet, I can watch a movie. The movie is a mini game, right? What happens is you're in the cinema, and you have to try and keep your Ichiban awake. You have to try and keep him awake. And what happens is you get these rams, what they call REM rams, that try to send you asleep. And then you've got these cockerels called alarm cocks that try to keep him awake. And it turns into a rhythm game of trying to keep him awake while he's in the cinema watching these crazy films.
I know, I'm just checking. Has everybody else seen what you're seeing in this game? You kind of want to check
that out. That's what I'm saying about this game. It's insane. I'm not even spoiling half of it because there's so much more in this game.
Okay, right. So what do we think of this game then on the Metacritic? What do the reviewers say of it? Because it sounds like it's almost two games sort of mashed together. And I think that's maybe been my issue with it, looking into it. But hey, you know, obviously it's working for Einel. What do you think the critics, what score out of 100, Els, do you think that the critics have given this one? And just so you know, this is the next-gen version I've gone the for Xbox. The score okay. for. So the Xbox Series okay. X. Xbox Series X, yeah, got it right. That version that I'm going for.
I'm going to go with 71. Because I think if you've played it, then it sounds like it's a good game, but if you haven't played it, then you might be unsure. So I'm going to go with the people that have played it, say it's 71 or 72. I can't remember what I said.
71 from Els. Gav, what are you saying?
I think people love it, man. I think it's like high 80s. I'm going to go 86. I think the people who review these games are the people who are completely in love with and enamored with these games. I think it's high 80s.
Okay, high 80s. And what are you saying, Einel? You probably go for 99 here.
that would be my score. I would say critics, I'd say about 89. It's got some flaws. It is turn-based. This is the first time they've made it turn-based.
I am a big fan of turn-based.
So turn-based, for people who like obviously have never maybe used a turn-based fighting system before, is you choose what move you do, yes, then it happens, rather than it sort of being in real time, like Pokemon was back in the day.
Yes, it's a very dynamic kind of turn-based system. So everyone's moving around, but you take it in turns to do your different attacks, and depending on where your person is in the environment, they utilize different environmental things. And as I said, you start off from the gutter. One of your companions is homeless. One of his special moves is to chuck bird feed at you and the birds attack the person. It's great.
I honestly don't know if you've just woken up from some lucid dream or something. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, you're saying high 80s, 89. So 89. There was, on the Xbox Series X, the Metacritic score was 83. Oh. So pretty high. And the other versions were all around the 80s. So if you're looking for... how long is the main storyline, Einel?
I don't know. It's massive. I've still not finished it. I've played about 30 hours. I've not finished it.
This is interesting because for a man who doesn't like games that take longer than 5-6 hours to finish, he is loving Yakuza. Interesting. So there we are. That's Yakuza Like a Dragon. That sounds like a bit of you. Let us know why you love it. Hashtag press X to continue. Get in touch with us and give us your thoughts. Right then, Els.
It's Curry outside. It's hauled in by Los Angeles. Outside Brent.
Let's get into it. Should NBA. You? By the sounds of it, I'm going to be going and downloading this as soon as we finish recording this podcast. Is that what you're saying? I love sports games. I love basketball. But I've just been put off a little bit by NBA 2K recently. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, if you like sports games and basketball, then I think this is definitely the game for you. I think, because I obviously, as I said earlier, I only started playing in NBA 2K20, and there's so many games in the franchise. It's been going on for years. But I just think that for a sports game, for some reason, it just adds something extra. And I don't know what it is, if it's the graphics, the gameplay, the music, or... so. The thing I love most about the game is the My Career mode. So basically you have your own player and they start by making this sort of like, it's half gameplay, half sort of a motion picture of your progression from college basketball to the NBA. And then obviously once you get past that, you're then in the NBA playing for whatever team you pick and stuff like that. And it's just really well done. They always have proper actors. They had last year, they had Idris Elba. Yeah. He was doing one of the characters. This year they've got quite a few different actors as well. And they always have like an NBA player. So last year it was LeBron James. This year it is, he plays for Portland. Oh, Damian Lillard. And he was a big part of it this year. So that aspect kind of, it just creates excitement around it. But then once you get into the NBA, it just unlocks this whole new world. So there's this thing called The Neighborhood, which I could best describe as being like a sports game with NBA and you play basketball. But then also they have The Neighborhood, which is sort of like a GTA type thing. So you have a city which you can explore. You can go into different shops and choose what tattoos you want or what clothes you want or what hairstyle you want. You can meet up with people online and play against them on the courts. And it's just really like there's so many things to explore in the game. Oh, and you have a daily wheel spin, which is similar to in GTA, and you get rewards every day. So it's kind of like a way to keep you locked in, keep you going back every day. And the next gen patch, which they released towards the end of last year, just I think it was around the time where the PS5 came out.
Yeah.
It's just like the NBA 2K21 for the PS4 and the NBA 2K21 for the PS5 are two completely separate games. They've completely revolutionized just the controls of the game firstly, because obviously with the PS5, you've got the new remote and just the way, the dynamics of the game, when your player gets fatigued, it's harder to press the buttons at the back. So L2 and R2, when your player is fatigued, you can't press them because...
Oh, that's class.
Yeah, cool, it's really, really good. That's so cool. You're running and you can't sprint anymore because your player is too out of breath. So then you've got to sort of have a breather, then you can start sprinting again, which is kind of class. Annoying, but also it's a really good feature, I think.
Yeah, because we've talked on this podcast about like whether or not people are actually going to utilize like the new controllers and stuff like that. Like, yeah. Are people actually going to put the effort into making it work? That sounds like, even though, as you say, it's quite annoying, it's actually, you're doing it, you've got, oh, that's actually quite clever.
That's quite cool. Yeah. Because usually when they upgrade from like the, you know, previous generations to the new generations, it's usually just graphics, isn't it? But controls and stuff stay broadly the same. So that's really interesting that they've messed around with that stuff as well.
Yeah. So I was really impressed with that. And then they have, so as I said earlier, they have the neighborhood, which is a staple piece, which has been in the game for a few years. They've changed it now to the city. So instead of having just one neighborhood, which was sort of just like a square of different shops and stuff, the city is massive. It's like a whole new map. You've got way more things to explore, way more courts, way more shops, things like that. And then also they've added in, which is good for like new players, I would say, something called Rookieville. So before you can get into the city, you have to enter Rookieville, where you play enough times in order to progress into the city. Because if you're new to the game and you're trying to play on the courts in the neighborhood, everyone else is like a pro. I'm not even joking. No one will play with you. If you're a newbie, because you get a badge as well. So if you're a bronze, your average sort of score is about 70. No one will play with you. They'll literally walk off the court when you walk on the court.
Savage.
So I think the new aspect of Rookieville is definitely good for sort of first time players and stuff like that, because it kind of weans you into the game and then it gets your score up, so then when you get into the city you're not sort of like a newcomer and people will actually want to play with you.
I'm so keen to get into talking about this game that I didn't even mention how much it costs and where you can get it. So you can get it from the PS4 upwards, basically, so all that generation of consoles, the new generation of consoles, PC Stadia as well. It'll cost you anywhere from £25, depending on what console you've got, up to £90, because they've got all the special Kobe editions and all the different stuff out there. So you've sort of started touching on my question, Els. Is one of the things that have put me off getting into NBA 2K is because I know the controls are quite difficult to master, because I was big on 2K17 and 18 were the last two I really played and got quite good. And then I didn't play for a couple of years, and I'm just scared about trying to get back into it because the controls are difficult to master, because those people who are playing it are playing it all the time. Yeah. And so what that learning curve, I think, is pretty steep. And is that's put me off a little bit?
Yeah. I'll be honest, when I first started playing, for about the first 2 or 3 months, I was terrible, like really bad. And as much as I love the game, I get really bad gaming rage. So I will be screaming at my TV. I'm pretty sure my neighbors like thinking, what the hell, whenever I'm like swearing and shouting. with this game, I think it's the game that makes me the most angry, because it's so frustrating when you're really, really trying to be good at a game and you just don't know what's going on. But if you stick at it, I just had a, you know, you have like a light bulb moment, and then I just kind of knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
But you just got to persevere. And once you get through that, then you'll really fall in love with it. I would suggest, though, just playing by yourself, just doing the My Career before going into the city or the neighborhood, if you've not picked up sort of how to do the game. Because honestly, the level of players in this game are just... people must spend their whole day playing this game. That's what, like, I've concluded it.
I've always had this thing with sports games, because you have to always have the latest one. I kind of fell out of buying them. It's not that I don't enjoy them. Like, I love, like, get some mates around in a game of FIFA or a game of NBA. Yeah, I'm down. But for me to kind of buy it every time, I'm always out, because I enjoy playing sports game the most when it's local, where I have bunch of people in my house and I'm with them and I can trash talk in their face and things like that. Like online, I'm not a fan of like online kind of sports games, because that kind of trash talk element isn't really there. And when you lose a game to someone who's like really, really good, it can just ruin your day, innit? Whereas when you play with your mates, you always seem to be on a similar kind of level. Like, it sounds incredible, but then I look at the price and I see, like, for the next-gen ones, it's, like, £70, and I'm like, I'll have to pay the same thing again next year if I want to keep on playing, and it's like, I don't know. If there was one every couple years with some updates to, like, the roster and things, I'll be down. But
yeah,
buying a full game every year, I don't know.
Mate, I'm always tempted by the 2K games, because I think 2K do... what's some of the best ways of like marketing their sports games,
soundtracks are fire.
Soundtracks are incredible. Like the people they get involved, like Mahershala Ali was in the last NBA game, like Spike Lee directed it and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? It's like the people they get involved there. They even made that golf game look good.
I love a golf game.
And I don't really care. It's like, decent. But I feel like that's the thing. They can make all of that stuff look good. I feel like they must be building up to a rugby game. Because they just go...
fingers crossed.
Or they make golf good, like basketball. They make like UK, who, you know, not loads of basketball fans in the UK, but, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger. They made the UK care about basketball. Yeah. Let's do a rugby game now.
I haven't done a rugby game since the 2000s, right?
They can make rugby sexy.
Yeah, let's make rugby sexy. There's a rugby challenge game out here, who the less we talk about that, the better. And so, just to finish this off then, mm-hmm. Would you say that this edition of 2K, it's your second year round, is this for fans who are already in on the franchise, or is there enough here to entice someone like me to back in or in for the first time?
I definitely think it's a mix of both. I'm really, as someone who's played, this is my second one now, I'm really impressed with the next gen patch. So I would, anyone who's got a PS5, I would definitely recommend.
You've sold it to me based on the buttons alone, like the buttons.
Yeah,
the buttons.
Definitely
like,
that.
I'm into it. I'm going to have a go.
Okay, right then. What do you think then, Einel? Where do you think this sits in the Metacritic score? So I've given you two options here. The PS4 version, which Els was saying is pretty similar to one that was before, and then the PS5 version. So there's two different scores. So give me two.
I think PS4, I'd say 75. PS5, I want to go with 82.
Okay, Gav, what are you saying?
I think higher. I think the PS5 version, 89, and the PS4 version, 80.
Oh, Gav's gone big. What are you saying, Els?
Well,
Have you been looking?
No, not at all. But I don't think I'm going to go as high, because I know that fans of sports games are very critical.
Yeah, that's true.
So, PS4, I'm going to go with 75, and PS5, I'll go with 80.
So, it is low, actually. So, the PS4 version only got 68.
Wow.
On the Metacritic. So, people were not happy with that. The PS5 version, like you said, there's obviously a jump here, because that one's got 79. So, people are loving or preferring the PS5 version, certainly over the PS4. Again, let us know what you think. NBA 2K21. Should I be getting involved?
I mean, Yakuza's out there, you know. Yakuza's out there. Them big scores. I mean, hover your finger over that button, bro.
Stop trying to sell Yakuza. So let us know what you think. Hashtag press X to continue. Els, if I do download it, and if I'm getting really annoyed, then I'm going to blame you. So okay. Just so you know.
I'm ready.
Okay. Steph rises above. Now, we've been lucky during the series to have some pretty cool people drop in and have a chat with us on Press X to continue. And this episode is no different. Someone with a silly amount of YouTube hits and subscribers, one of the Sidemen, and one of the nicest YouTubers out there to boot. Vicstar's been chatting to us about getting involved more officially with the London Royal Ravens. They're the Call of Duty team. And he also shared some tips with us on how to be a top YouTuber.
Okay. Yeah, that's all good.
I was trying to think, the last time I bumped into you, Vic, it would have been E3, not last year, but the year before, in one of those parties that Xbox threw, where everybody was supposed to be trying to play the games, but there was, the queue was massive, so we ended up just drinking it. Everybody ends up...
Yeah, the usual, yeah. I think I remember that one.
But instead, we're meeting instead by Zoom, so not quite as fun.
Not as quiet, as nice as LA.
No, we make up for it. What gives you the bigger buzz then, Vic? Is it when your videos get over 1 million views, or that's probably nothing for you these days, is it? Or it gets multiple million views, or when you're in that final circle in Warzone and you can see you're close to the kill count? What gives you the bigger buzz?
Oh, see, it's a tough one. I would have to say this year, the biggest buzz, the most adrenaline, has been playing in tournaments and winning tournaments, because it's something so novel. I've been uploading videos. I've uploaded nearly 10,000 videos across my YouTube channels. Yeah. So it's something that I've done a lot. And there's always a great buzz in that dopamine hit when you get a video that people love and you see it kind of racking up views upon views. I still remember in my head, I can vividly remember a lot of the emotions when I had my first video that did really well. I reached a certain subscriber milestone and just kind of, it's starting to click in my head as kind of where I could take this too. But this year definitely has been very exciting to be in those high intensity situations and actually be able to deliver results that win tournaments and beat out other people who are more well known for their competitive ability in games. It's cool to kind of be able to get involved in that. And it's a new scene and a new direction for content for me.
Makes me think, why can't I shoot? why not look good? I suppose we should start. And I've already apologised, because I've got a Ravens jersey and a shirt here in the house and I'm not wearing it.
Oh, no.
We could have been matching. That's a mistake on my part.
Yeah.
But so you've joined forces with the London Royal Ravens, getting involved in the CDL's competitive scene. How did that happen? Why did that happen?
So this all started months and months ago. So obviously, I've always had an interest in Call of Duty. I've always had an understanding of what's going on in the competitive scene. And with the previous Call of Duty title, Modern Warfare, I really jumped back into Call of Duty, having covered every major Battle Royale since H1Z1. That was the first big Battle Royale to kind of blow up in content creation and live streams. So then when Modern Warfare dropped, Warzone was a perfect fit for me. And it was very exciting for me to be back creating Call of Duty videos, which is where I started 10, 11 years ago, back on Modern Warfare 2 and Black Ops 1. So I was interested in the game and doing really well on Warzone, playing in tournaments, building my audience. This then caught the attention of the Call of Duty League, who saw what I was doing, and they actually partnered up with me and sponsored me to run some co-streams of their Call of Duty League matches. Essentially, I was commentating, having, I guess, a watching party of some of their best matches with my audience. And the streams performed really well. We had, in some of the best ones, between 30 and 40,000 people watching these competitive matches with me. Hmm. And what I saw in the chat was really interesting to me. There were a lot of people saying, oh my goodness, I didn't know this existed. This is so cool. I didn't know people competed like this. They had events like this. And it just goes to show that gaming reaches such a wide, diverse audience of people. So the Call of Duty League were really happy with how that went. I really saw that there was this opportunity to put this huge league, which has great entertainment and production value that I was really enjoying, in front of my audience. And it turns out that the Royal Ravens, being a London team, was already a perfect fit. And we've created a partnership where I'm going to be driving their content. I'm going to be hosting co-streams of their matches on their channel. I'm going to be creating unique content with them helping them build out what they're doing, because esports is huge, as everyone knows. But often there in the past, there hasn't been an overlap between content creators, the huge audiences, and the esports. So we're looking to kind of bridge that gap. And I'm going to be doing whatever I can just to help create content, build brand recognition.
What do you think is the challenge? Because I'm fascinated by this question, right? You know, I've been reporting on gaming stuff now for the BBC for 5-6 years, and we've dipped our toes in with esports. Every time we do an esports story, we interviewed two of the Ravens players last year, the Marshall twins, and that did amazingly well on the BBC platform. So many people read that article and listened to that interview that went out on Radio 1. And bits of esports we do always does really well, but it's trying to really cut through to the British mainstream has always been the big challenge, isn't it, with esports? It's the next sort of frontier for a team, you know, the CDL, especially when you've got a title like Call of Duty that's so popular. You've got sportsmen, rappers, everybody plays Call of Duty, but they don't necessarily watch the CDL yet. How do you think, or what's your strategy of trying to get them involved in the competitive side?
I think the biggest thing that will help grow the esports is the personalities within it. I think it's amazing when people are great at a game, but I think what is the icing on the cake is when they're entertaining to watch. You feel like you can get to know that person, and you really have a reason to root for them. Mm-hmm. And you know the storylines going on behind the scenes. If there's a bit of drama, you know, it's not always a bad thing. Rivalries are always great. And I think that is what the media look for. And that's what creates kind of interest. It's discussion points. I think it's really important to build out an understanding and following of the people involved. And actually, when I think of it, a great example of a sport or a competitive sport that has done that is Formula One. When you look at that, there's so many kind of underlying storylines. There's so many interactions between the drivers. We're on a massive tangent here, but with the Netflix show Drive to Survive, that kind of focuses on the undertones of what's going on, really helps you understand who the racers are, what their background is, where they want to go. Then when you're watching the Formula One, you're not just watching people drive around a track, you're watching people you understand and know, and there's kind of more meaning to it. So yeah. I think, again, a similar thing in the Call of Duty League would be amazing to see, where people are starting to understand the players more. And I think that is the key area to focus, and that will create a lot more interest in the league. And I'm excited to kind of be part of that and help bring that to the forefront.
Can you settle an argument for me and my mate? So he says that kills in Warzone are more important. And I say, no, it's about wins. Wins over kills.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you sit in this debate?
So in this debate, it's a tough one, because the idea of a battle royale game is to be the last team standing. That is correct. The entire concept of the game is to win. So in that sense, you're totally right. I sit in a slightly different position where I'm a content creator, and people want to see kills. They want high-paced action. So from my perspective, kills are very important. I've also played in a lot of tournaments where it's whichever team can get the most eliminations wins. It doesn't matter where anyone places. If I had to, as if I was to be neutral and not play into the fact that I'm a content creator, it's a battle royale game. It's the Hunger Games. It's last team standing wins. That should be the objective. And I think it comes up on your screen. Number one, victory. That's the aim. So I'll give you that
100%.
One. 100%.
I agree with you, Vic, 100%. You hear it here, me and Vic on the exact same page. A lot of people listening to this will be aspiring YouTubers and streamers themselves. If you were to give them a tip, something to think about when they're sort of setting up their channel or trying to grow, what would that be?
So I've got kind of three core YouTube tips for anyone trying to do it for fun or to build an audience. So number one is you have to be consistent with it and give it time. I think I went 7 years straight of uploading a new video every single day without missing a single day. For me, it was a kind of pledge I made to myself. I had a place to study natural sciences at UCL back in, probably would have been 2013, I think. And I decided to take a gap year to make content full time. And I said, look, if I'm taking a year out of what could be the rest of my career and life, I'm going to dedicate myself to this, and I'm going to stick to making a video every single day without fail. And I think that was a huge part of helping me build my audience. It's people, it was a reliable place where people, you know, there's going to be a new video from Vic every day. I can go and watch it. And I think that's an important thing. Number two is you need to have fun making the content. You have to find something that either you have an enjoyment for or a way of putting a spin on something that makes sure you enjoy it, because that's the only way you'll be able to remain consistent. Third tip is to either do something that no one else is doing. So take something that someone else is doing and find a niche, a unique spin, or if somebody else is doing something that you would like to do, you have to do it better. You have to work out how to do what they're doing and do it better. That's the only way I feel like you could ever build an audience beyond what you have. It's either something unique or something better than what's already out there. And it is tough these days, I'll be honest. If I had to start a channel right now today, I don't know where I'd start, what I do, how I would go about it, because the space is incredibly saturated. And I guess actually a fourth kind of side note is not to expect results or chase results. I think it's really important just to focus on what you kind of enjoy and not be too put off by where it gets you to.
Brilliant. So excuse me, my producer's phoning me. I'm on the phone, Mike. Come on, I'm interviewing you now. What are you calling me for? Anyway, we do turn out. Yeah, listen, Vic, I think that's pretty much us there now. Anyway, listen, thank you so much for your time. Just a couple of little things, thoughts to finish up. Obviously, you're running your Warzone events. Anytime you need Team BBC to come and compete, low KD, chances of basically being, you know, fodder for literally everybody else on the map, you know? You know where we are now, so...
I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep that in mind.
When, you know, not there for glorious gameplay, but, you know, there to make up the numbers and make it up. We will, you know, we can do that.
I got you.
No, mate, it's been a pleasure. It's been lovely to chat to you. And good luck with it all. We'll be watching, and fingers crossed the Ravens can make a run to the for the title this year.
Yeah, definitely. Very exciting. Thank you for your time.
So those are Vic Starr's tips on being a top YouTuber. Now, Els, you just recently celebrated a milestone for your YouTube channel.
I have. I hit 2 years on YouTube a few days. Actually, no, it was a few weeks ago now. Yes, thank you.
Well done. 2 years.
Made it. I've stuck it Amazing. Out this long. It's gone really quickly, I'll be honest with you. I can't believe it's been 2 years. But I went back and reacted to my first ever YouTube upload. And it was traumatic. Like, just the first few, I was like, what is going on here? But it is good to sort of look back and see how far you've come.
Yeah, it's hard, man. We did a thing recently for an anniversary thing for our patrons where we went back and reacted and we did like a director's commentary of our first ever episode. And I was like, I think I did the whole thing just holding my eyes being like, who is this moron? Why do people like this show? I was like, it's like looking at, like, I know it's me, but it's like looking at a different person. Yeah. It's like looking at like an alternate reality version. Oh my gosh,
was it Beardless Gav?
No, I've got a beard, but it's like 5 years ago or something like that. It's like, I feel like I was a different person 5 years ago, you know? Like, I feel sick.
Yeah, no, you obviously, so, and I know, obviously, you stream, Gav, you stream, Els, you were saying you dip in and out of streaming. Mm-hmm. What is it over, you know, YouTube and streaming are very different, but very similar, aren't they? Have you, what's your YouTube sort of, I'm trying to think of people listening who are interested in getting involved. What are your sort of thoughts? Vic Starr shared his thoughts with us there, but you know, YouTube versus streaming, you have to be very different when you're doing
Absolutely,
both, right?
Yeah.
They are two different things, and I commend people that stream so much, because from the times that I've streamed, it takes a lot out of you, because it's you're on camera, it's unfiltered, you're gaming, you're having to interact with the chat, you're trying to stay engaging the whole time. And I can only do like an hour and a half and I'm knackered. So I don't know how people are out here doing sort of like 5-6 hour streams. With YouTube, you do have the benefit of sort of being in your flat by yourself, being able to talk to the camera and then going away and being able to edit it the way that you want, which I quite like, because I edit all my own stuff. So I'm able to sort of, I've learned over the course of these past 2 years what people see and like and what people are engaged with, so I sort of know how to edit myself. I think with streaming it's a lot harder to sort of stay consistent. You have to sort of, I think with YouTube you're able to stay at a level of sort of energy But with Twitch, you can't, it's impossible to say sort of like just talking straight for 3-4 hours. It takes a lot of energy out of you. But then again, with YouTube, it's you have to sit, you have to film, then you've got to sit down and edit it all, then you've got to promote it. It's a lot of hard work, but you know, it is rewarding at the end of the day.
Yeah, I feel like with you, that the reason I sort of like YouTube a little bit more than streaming is like, I think streaming's amazing. I feel like it's kind of like a bit ephemeral. It's just like you stream and it's gone. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas like people rewatch the way that we edit our shows, people rewatch them like they rewatch like Netflix and stuff like that, because they've got favorite episodes, like they've got favorite moments, because there's a cadence to it, there's a sort of rhythm to every single one of our Let's Plays that I feel like would be really hard to replicate in a stream. Mm-hmm. You know, because like you're watching a stream and you're waiting for like the big moments, the big funny moments that you can talk about with your mates and stuff, whereas that might not happen, it might not come. Whereas in an edited video that we put up, you know, every, like people watch like Saturday morning cartoons, and they know that those moments are coming, you know?
Whether you are a YouTuber or like a live streamer, the amount of skills that you learn from doing either of them, from video editing, learning about all the different software applications and things like that, to like Photoshopping and live broadcasting, learning about audio mixing and leveling, and what would take a TV production company 20 to 30 people is being done by one person in their bedroom or in their living space. And I think that's incredible.
I think a lot of people see YouTubers and just decide, I want to do YouTube, but it is a lot of hard work, especially behind the scenes. And that's definitely one thing I would say to anyone who's thinking about doing YouTube, is do something that you enjoy, because you've got to spend sort of 2 days editing a 10-minute video, as we said. And if you're not enjoying the footage that you're editing, it's very draining. So do something you enjoy. Be consistent. I try and set a schedule. So I upload every Wednesday at 7 p.m. So then people know when to expect a new video from you. I think being consistent, setting targets for yourself, will then help you to create content and be consistent with your content. And then people sort of tune in at that specific time.
It's that
every
accountability
week.
Isn't it?
And people see that you're putting the effort in them, because nobody's tuning into Game of Thrones being like, oh, it's not on this week. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like people see that you're putting the effort in, so then they're like, oh no, I want to invest my time in being part of this community, because it's, you know, it's definitely going to be here in a year's time, you know.
And if you're inspired to kick off your YouTube channel that goes on to make millions and millions of pounds off the back of this conversation, we're all taking 12%.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
15 over here.
That's how it works. Okay. and if you are inspired to get going, or if you've just started a YouTube channel, let us know. Show up, share it with us. Hashtag PressX to continue. Just make sure you're not just ripping off our content. That's all. That'll be fine.
Jill, over here.
Now, look, Gav, Resident Evil.
How could this many people be infected?
One of the, you know, biggest gaming franchises out there. We're in that sort of period now where we're remaking a lot of the old Resi games. Last year, Resident Evil 3 came out. I'm too much of a chicken to spend a lot of time in Resident Evil games. I find them very scary. I don't like them. However, they are available on the Xbox One, the PS4, the PC. Cost you about £20 and upwards. Is this a good remake, this one?
Do you know what? I wanted to talk about this today, because I feel like when this came out, it got a bit of a kick in, because I feel like when games come out, and I, this is not having a go at any games reviewers at all, but I feel like sometimes people focus too much on what's not there rather than what's actually there. Resi 3 definitely happened with, because Resi 2 came out and that was like a big remake, and there's a lot of like extra content put into Resident Evil 2, and it was an incredible game. Like, lots of people's like game of the year. And then Resi 3 came out, and Resi 3 is a much smaller game anyway, and there's not so much there in the actual original version. So when they remade it, they didn't add a whole lot, but what they did do is use this mad amazing looking engine they did and completely remade the game, and it looks beautiful. It's a stunning looking game, but I think people give it a bit of a kick in because it's quite short. It doesn't feel as sumptuous as Resi 2. And I think like when it first came out, people were like, oh, is that it? kind of thing. But now that I went back recently and played it for our channel, and we played on hardcore mode, and it's actually, it's a really nice companion piece to Resi 2, but it feels like you're playing basically a little bit of DLC for Resi 2, which if you're releasing it as a full game price, maybe that's not as great. But if you're going back and playing it for £20 and you want, you know, a good like 4 or 5 hour little campaign out of it, which you will get a little bit longer on hardcore.
Hard mode.
Yeah, I feel like it needs to be revisited, I think.
Yeah, so it's an action game where you're obviously trying to survive a zombie apocalypse in its base essence. Yeah. Is this by the sounds of it, it's for the Resi fans, right? Because like you said, they remade number 2 a couple of years ago, which is like the pinnacle of Resident Evil games, I guess. This to me just sounds like if you're really into it and you want a prettier, nicer looking version of the game you already love, it's great. Mm. For anyone else, nah.
I don't know though, because I think it feels weirdly self-contained as well, because there's little nods, and if you have played the other games, there's little like cheeky little nods, you're like, ah, that's awesome, and little characters that show up and things like that. But this feels like a proper like action game rather than sort of a horror survival game. So I think actually, Steph, if you're scared, too scared to play the other ones, maybe have a go of this, because there's a lot more action involved.
Can I shoot my way out?
I think you basically get a grenade launcher in the first like hour.
Yes.
So you'll be all right.
Talking.
Yeah. But yeah, we went back and played it on hardcore mode recently, and that does transform it a little bit, because you've basically got this giant monster chasing you constantly, who's basically like the Terminator, but like gloopier. And if you put it on hardcore mode, it is essentially like boss fights constantly.
Can me and Els play it on easy?
Yeah, absolutely.
I played Resident Evil 2 Remake. I think I that was my first stream, is when I played Resident Evil Remake. I did a couple of them. I really like horror games, so I was a big fan.
Ah, class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I just a wimp by now? Is that what this is?
I don't get me wrong, man. I'm a bit scared of some horror games as well. Any games that touch on like ghosts and things like that, nah, I don't play with them.
Because you think ghosts are real,
we need the supernatural stuff. But like, in terms of Resident Evil,
what's up behind you?
Don't you dare. It says a Resident Evil 3 remake. I really enjoyed this one. I'm a little bit biased. My friend plays Nikolai, and he's like Neil Newborn. He's the motion capture for Nemesis as well. I was like, every time I play the game, I was like, there he is. What are you doing, bruv? Outside of that, it's a really good game. I like how short it is, because I'm a fan of short games.
I just want to check. You know the guy who played Nikolai then, I know.
Yeah, Neil Newborn.
I called him some names, man.
Is it? Oh, I won't spoil the story, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
he's a wicked guy, man.
Metacritic score for Resident Evil 3. Els, what are you saying?
I'm going to go low, because I obviously think people did complain about it. So I'm going to say 65.
65 from Els. Einel?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people complained, but I really enjoyed it. 86.
86, Gav.
74.
79 was the answer. Ooh, PS4, wow. 79. So that's sort of an 8 out of 10 game for you there.
It gets worse every night.
They don't want the world to know what they've done.
Resident Evil 3, what do you think? Let us know. Hashtag press X to continue. Right, we're finishing up today with a big moment. Okay, he's sat on the sidelines all series so far. He's waited for this opportunity. And now the power, the orb of Hall of Game power, is being passed, Einel, virtually through the Zoom into your hands. Look after it. Carefully grab it with your hands.
Yeah,
Hold it gently. This is a big moment. What are you putting in to the Press X to Continue Hall of Game?
I've got a game, right, which was in development for a very long time. Very long time.
Usually a bad start.
I know.
That's usually bad news.
It had a lot riding on it, because the previous entries in the franchise, people loved them, but then they were saying it's getting a bit too samey. It's the same formula over and over again. And people were harking for something a bit more open worldy, a bit more open ended, and they really wanted to kind of sink their teeth into a game, and they knew that this company could create it. My game that I'm putting into the Hall of Game is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Oh, bravo.
On the Wii U and the Nintendo Switch. It's a game that changed the landscape in many ways for open world adventures. Once that game came out, people would not take it, were not accepting any of them Ubisoft open world games anymore. They're like, nah, not having it anymore. The standard is there. It was a game where it didn't rely on the map and loads of icons on the screen. It was just like, just go out there and explore, innit? How about you go and explore? How about that?
Now, Els, your jaw hit the floor when I announced that.
Well, Ocarina of Time exists, so I don't know why that's not in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. Wow. Not happy.
Wow. Okay. Not happy.
Ocarina of Time's one of the most iconic games ever. It's my second favourite game ever. And that changed the landscape of a lot of games.
I think Els is genuinely annoyed.
No, I'm not, because I do like Breath of the Wild, but you know, I prefer Ocarina.
Ocarina of Time was fantastic. Going back to it now,
I can still play it now. I still play.
I go back to
the version. Is good, man.
It's all right. I always preferred Majora's Mask over that one.
No, I'm just not taking Majora's that. Mask. I'm sorry.
Majora's Mask. I enjoyed the deeper story. The more darker story it told, the sentimental moments it had. That I don't think Ocarina of Time had those moments.
Are you joking?
I just got to paint a picture because you can't see me. Elsa's having to close her eyes to calm herself down here. I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, look, Breath of the Wild. One thing I will say for Breath of the Wild, it is a beautiful game and makes the most of the Switch. Zelda fans, has Aina put the right Zelda game into the Hall of Game? Let us know what you think. Are you on Elsa's side of this argument, or are you with Einel? Hashtag press X to continue. What are you saying, Gav? It's a good choice, is it?
It is a good choice. You know what? This is on my, not Hall of Game, but this is on my Hall of Shame, because I never finished Breath of the Wild, man. And I need to finish it.
Don't need to. That's why I didn't mean to just experience.
Yeah, I need to finish it.
I want to finish it. But it's one of those things where I work got wild at one point, and I went back to try and finish it, and I couldn't remember anything that was going on. I couldn't remember why I was in the middle of the desert and everything was on fire. So I need to go back and figure out where I am and then actually finish it, I think.
We started off this podcast talking about my resolution for 2021 is probably going to be to make sure I actually finish games. Mm-hmm. And let's add Breath of the Wild onto that list as well. So we've got Assassin's Creed, Breath of the Wild, Cyberpunk, Ghost of Tsushima.
Those are all massive. You need to start playing like 3-hour, 4-hour walking simulators or something, that made.
I know. That's what I won.
Final Fantasy. Did you finish 7 remake?
You have to finish Final Fantasy. No, you didn't.
You didn't finish that either.
Final Fantasy, put that onto the list.
You need to finish that for the end sequence.
I finished Remake and managed to not know anything that was going to go on, and I finished it on a stream, and I was in bits, man. It was awesome.
It's a great remake.
Okay, so I'm not too sure if Ellis is going to want to come back on the pod now, because we've Morty offended her by choosing a different Zelda, and I haven't finished Final Fantasy VII, so I think this might be for the last time. Ellis, thank you so much for coming on to the pod. Thanks for sticking with us, you XC beasts. Lovely to have you in the Continue Club. And we will see you Tuesday for the next episode of Press X. Bye-bye.